On this episode of The Playbook, I have Wilbur Yu, the founder and CEO of UTech. And I'm most curious about how do you turn a $600 investment into a multi-million dollar company? Also, learn the distinction between luck and good timing. Join me for all of this and more on The Playbook. This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneur The Playbook, and I have a true entrepreneur from zero to millions. It's at a young age. We're going to get into his playbook success. Wilbur Yu, the founder and CEO of UTech. Welcome to The Playbook.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, that smile. I told you right off the bat, you went to DeVry University, which I love the story. And I said, hey, aren't they using you for commercials? Because I think you went from like $600 to over $20 million. And you should be the poster child. And you said, hey, you could be my agent. So I picked up a new agent client. That works for me. Who needs Troy Aikman, Steve Young, and Warren Moon when you got Wilbur Yu?
That's awesome. That's what I said, you know?
Exactly, man. Well, Look, you know, I want to talk about when people see a young CEO, a young founder, multimillionaire, they think to themselves, he's lucky. I want you to explain to everyone how lucky you are and what it took to be that lucky.
Well, the way I see it is that, yes, I've been lucky. You know, I feel as though a lot of the opportunities that have happened, you know, it's right timing, so you can call it luck. But at the same time, you know, I bust my ass and I work hard and I do everything I possibly can. And I
gotta stop you. Man, I got to stop you like this. But when I get a genius moment, when you say, you know, yeah, well, I was lucky, but, you know, a lot of people say it was timing. Here's what I say. Everybody was living in the same time, right? No, it's a man-made construct. So there is no luck of timing, right? Everybody's living in the same time. You did something to prepare yourself to be in that situation, to create the attention plus intention, to create that coincidence. And, you know, I have a friend, Mike Tannenbaum, who's the GM of the Jets, and he used to say he's lucky. I was like, dude, 2 years you worked for $600 a month with $100,000 of law loans. You believed in yourself. You invested in yourself. Nobody was paying you a ton of money to be at the right place at the right time. Everybody was at the same time. So what were some of the investments you made in yourself before your timing was correct?
Well, I've been programming since I was a kid. And then I went to ASU my first year of college, and I partied too much. I kind of got out of hand. So I came back and I actually went to NIU for my computer science degree. And so I kind of, you know, invested in education because I still believe in it. But I also had a business when I was in college, and it failed, but it taught me more in that year that I failed in that business than any other time. So for me, I was learning from all the mistakes, and if anything, it taught me everything not to do. And so when I started UTech, I kind of took that, and I took the education that I had and the people that I've met and kind of, you know, put it all together.
How old were you when you started programming?
I was 10.
You were 10. And did your friends and family give you slack because you weren't outside playing all the time?
Well, that's the thing. So I was outside playing. I had a lot of friends. I was playing sports. I was doing all this stuff. But at night, or, you know, when during the summer, if there was nothing to do, it was too hot or whatever, I would play this game. And this game was called Lineage. And, you know, you would pay monthly for it. So this was when I was 10. So this was like 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago. But you would pay like $10 a month to play this game. And I would play and play and play. And I realized that, well, you know, there's certain limitations that you can do. So the files of that game, the code of that game got leaked. And so I took it, I put it on my own server. And then I started teaching myself how to change certain things in the game, how to make certain things happen the way I want. I put it up on a server and I let people play for free. And so after they started playing for free, we had 10, 15,000 users on that server. And then I realized, well, how do we make money from it? Because I'm, you know, I have a server to pay for. So I started selling virtual items, which was a line of code that I could write, and they would pay $250 for that virtual item. And after about a month or two, I was making $5,000 a week just online.
How old were you? How old were you?
10, 11.
Making 5,000 a week.
Yeah.
Where were you putting your money?
It was going into a PayPal account, and I didn't tell my parents. So what happened was 6 months down the line, I got a cease and desist letter come in, and they shut me down. But they let me keep the money, so it was all good.
They let you keep the money. Did your parents ever find out you had that money?
Yeah. I mean, it.
Would you buy a car when you were 16? You're like, oh, I got this.
My parents took care of that, but no, I think it helped. It was fun, but you know, I like to say that a lot of people now in today's world, you'll see on apps where you can buy virtual items and you can buy, you know, Candy Crush and all these success stories. I did it first.
Yeah. Oh, I get that. But I owned a company called Global Web Video that streamed video for corporate, because I was an enterprise guy. And while I was working at West, I had my brother-in-law sell like Kimberly Clark streaming videos of the CEO messages.
Okay.
We were paying thousands of dollars a month to host like one little stream video of the CEO's message. You know, in the early, early days. And I had another one, a cloud-based legal compliant company in India, one of the first cloud-based, all your legal records online, and you could,
wow,
et cetera. So I get the feeling. I was just early. You know, the most interesting thing, though, about young entrepreneurs, successful entrepreneurs, is that they still go through the same segmentation, acceleration, growth, and learning curve as everyone else, but they usually start at 10, right? And so, but what most 21-year-olds, you know, that are dropping out of college see is, oh, you know, I want to be like Wilbur, and they don't realize that they're at ground zero where you were,
right,
at 10, and so they have to learn their lessons. They have to allow the universe to move them into a place where they see that everything happens at the right way at the perfect time, and all the dummy tax that you paid,
right,
and all the energy and effort that you gave. Now, one of the things that's funny, my brother went to, all my siblings went there, I believe, but my one brother that's closest to me, he's a year and a half younger than I am, you know, went to Harvard, and he used to give me that whole, oh, you know, I played with everyone, and I played football in high school, and, you know, I did this and this. I'm like, dude, you spend a lot of time doing things that I wanted you to come out and play with me. That's why I asked you that question. And,
yeah,
you know, a lot of investment in himself. And I always told him when he graduated, you know, summa cum laude from Harvard in 3 years. And
wow,
you know, just as I said, yeah, look who's laughing now. One of the things I want to get at is that I try to teach young entrepreneurs to vote for what they want, you know, and that I'm sure when you're in college and you were failing and learning those lessons, there had to be some people out there that were voting for different things for you. Maybe they were even laughing at you, making fun of you, because that's been my entire career. But eventually, right, they applaud us, and they call us lucky, and they tell us, man, I knew you could do it. I've always been there for you. I'm like,
right.
Oh, my memory might not be that good. I heard you talking behind my back to my mom, telling her what an idiot I was, and how right. could I not be a real lawyer and not go to a real, you know, a real right. job and go into the internet in 92. What were some of those challenging times when, you know, you were failing and everybody was kind of pushing you in a different direction? Were your parents ever like, hey, you got to do something different, or friends of yours telling you when you failed?
You know, it's funny. So for me, when I was doing the first business, it was tough. And I was,
what was that first business, by the way?
It was called the City of Ads. And the idea behind it was to sell advertising placements on a interactive map. And so when we first started it, we started building it out and everything, but you know, there was a lot of people, I think I was 19 at the time. There was a lot of people that were like, you know, what are you doing? You know, everyone else is partying and doing all this stuff, and I'm trying to start this business. And truthfully, my parents gave me the first investment money for it. So, you know, they gave me $20,000 to kind of start this thing at 19 years old.
They stole it from you when you were 10. So they were giving it back to you, let's be honest.
But Yeah, I mean, I had friends, I had people telling me like, you're crazy, this is not going to work. And it didn't. And they were right about it. But the one thing that they didn't know was that, you know, it's something where I learned and I met people. I learned how to run QuickBooks. I learned how to, you know, try and get rid of certain expenses that you don't actually need. You know, that's why I'm a strong believer in bootstrapping, because these businesses, you know, for these people that go get funded for $20 million that are not a profitable business, they're not learning how to make it profitable. You know, they're just spending money to try and generate revenue in all these different ways. And for me, I'm more of, okay, I'm going to learn and wear all these different hats so I don't have to absorb those costs in the beginning. And eventually I'll get there, but I want to prove my model. I want to create revenue. And that's kind of the business terms.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of bootstrapping in the respect that, you know, I believe everything's a test or lessons, right? Life's about lessons. The lessons are keep on coming. You just don't learn as much as you would when you have no compared to when you have 20 million to start. And, you know, more people fail that have 20 million to start than have zero to start. It is very true. Percentage wise, the percentage is much higher. People that have a higher amount to start, higher percentage of failing than those that bootstrap it. The guy, you know, one of my favorite entrepreneurs, Josh York, he needed $15,000 to start his franchise, his gym guy's franchise. And so he literally slept in his car, got a job that, you know, he knew nothing about, and saved like 99% of every penny he made. He saved the 1% went to eating when he couldn't figure out how to eat for free. you know, he learned a lot more, and that's why the resilience of, you know, being in that business, he's surviving through this period of time. And that's why I invest in entrepreneurs that have bootstrapped. And I'd prefer to see a guy who has failed his business in college, you know, maybe even went bankrupt one time.
Yep.
Go ahead and tell me he's already paid the dummy tax with his own money, with his own time, than my money and my time.
It's true. That's true.
Through the journey, though, you know, it's a 20-year. I always say, on average, it takes about 17 and a half years to get to where you want to be as an entrepreneur. You started at 10, probably at 27 and a half. You were at a good place. And then you get to 200 and 400 and 800 of the way. And that's how it works. You know, I'm really looking in that playbook side of things of where was that magic lesson? Like, what is one of the magic lessons in that 17 and a half year period that, if you know, you're looking at a 10-year-old that says, you know, hey, Mr. You, I want to be just like you, no pun intended, you know, give me some goods, man. What was like the thing that kept you going, or I should know that you didn't know?
I hate being told no. So that was it. I mean, ever since I was a little, ever since, you know, you can ask my parents as well, if they said no, I did it anyway. I would find a way to do it. I just hate being told no. So, you know, throughout this journey, I just realized that, you know, I wanted to work for myself. I wanted to do something on my own. But along the way, I've learned lessons that are crazy. You know, I've learned that, you know, who you surround yourself with is typically who you end up like. So, you know, like, show me your friends and I'll show you your future.
Oh man, you're my godson. I hope my kids are listening to this. They hate when I tell them that. Show me your friends.
It's so true.
My favorite parent line. Show me your friends and I'll show you your future. I was 36 years old and learned that lesson. I tell my kids every day, show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Love it.
Yeah, that's true. And I just surrounded me or myself with people that, one, that had the same goals as me, two, that wanted to see, you know, and build something succeed. And when I did that, I put together a really solid team and, you know, we conquered everything. I mean, there wasn't a thing that we couldn't conquer. And then after obviously this whole COVID thing and all that stuff that we went through, now I really know, like, a recession's not going to scare me. Things like that are not going to scare me anymore because we've gotten through it.
Yeah. One question, you know, that I have as a parent, you know, I grew up with nothing. You know, I had a single mom, six kids, different situation than you. It seems as if you were at least middle class, if not even upper middle class, which is, do you think it's, as an entrepreneur, an advantage or a disadvantage to have parents that have some sort of means?
I think it could go both ways. I think there's an advantage because you get, you know, better education. You get to do things that, you know, most people don't get to have. It puts you at a disadvantage because of the entitlement factor. And so on that end, there's a lot of people that, you know, they come from middle-class families or higher income families that really never had to do anything or never really had to struggle. So I kind of see both sides of it. The thing with me and my family is it's a little bit of both. So when my mom came here, I mean, we had nothing. She was working at Baskin Robbins for $5.50 an hour and she busted her ass and did everything she could. And now she's a CPA and she works for a big firm. So, and then along the way, you know, obviously when I was five or six and, you know, my clothes were from Goodwill. My toys were from Goodwill. You know, we didn't have anything, but you know, as I got older, because she worked harder, I got to see that too. And then things got easier and, you know, there was more financial means, I guess.
Yeah. Last question real quick. So I believe entrepreneurs, one of their greatest traits is to be resilient. And that's why in times like these that I call them the margins of millionaires are made. Guys like you do better in times like these because you're so resilient and you're looking for the opportunity. You're looking for how your capabilities are synergistic or supplementary to those opportunities. How are you positioning UTech considering pre-vaccine? I break it down as pre-vaccine and post-vaccine because I think until post-vaccine, we're not going to have a stable environment. Right. There's still the opportunities. It's just can't rely on anything until we get to post-vaccine. Right. How are you positioning UTech to be successful pre-vaccine and then post-vaccine?
So pre-vaccine, we worked with clients all over. So parking, hospitality, casinos, you name it, right? After the whole COVID situation, we kind of pivoted and we started focusing more on e-commerce and bringing on e-commerce companies. So we would reach out to manufacturers that are typically B2B and say, hey, you're kind of getting screwed over. Let's create a channel online and go B2C. And so actually during COVID, we've grown by, you know, I think 100%. We're hiring 15 people. So for us right now, we actually pivoted at the right time. And, you know, we're hiring, we're expanding, and we're looking to open an office, a third office in LA very soon. So for us, yeah, I mean, we've invested in certain areas, but during COVID, I mean, we realized that, hey, these companies, whether it's whatever it is, whatever you're selling, they need an online platform to go direct to consumer so they can control revenue. Awesome. And it's helped and our phones are ringing. So
no complaints over there. That's awesome, my friend. Well, last thing, you know, as we come out of this, your greatest lesson during COVID, I would love you to share that as we kind of enter out the end of the playbook. What's the biggest thing you've learned in the last 12 weeks?
Staying level-headed. Don't get too down and don't ride the highs too high and just stay kind of balanced. Because for me, you know, obviously a business kind of goes up and down. And as a leader and as an entrepreneur and the CEO, you have to be the one that's kind of balanced throughout. And so for me, you know, we've had days, you know, when it first happened and everyone freaked out and we had no idea what was going on. I mean, yeah, we didn't know how we were going to pay our bills. We dropped 30%, you know, within overnight like that, you know, because of the hospitality groups, because of the casinos and all that stuff. But we kind of sat down, we realized what we needed to do. We took it step by step. And then it kind of paid off. So just kind of stay level-headed and, you know, stay true to what you're doing and, you know, innovate.
You are executing on what I teach is the stop, drop, and roll. Be a ferocious Buddha. When things are chaotic, you got to stop, drop down into neutral, into that higher frequency, figure things out, rely on the capabilities you have, the skills, the knowledge. And the best part is, you know, you have the desire, the must be what you can be, and you're not going to quit, which is to me, the biggest component of what you've shown through that resilience. And I certainly am impressed, and you are DeVry's finest graduate ever.
Hey, I'm going to be emailing you for a deal. You know, if you want the space in commercials, you know, here we go.
The only deal I failed to get ever was Eric Dickerson. He actually offered his services. All he wanted was a Red Lobster card, and he would do the for the Red Lobster. And for some reason, Red Lobster passed on my boy. And I'm sure they're sorry today as the Rams became such a great component here in Los Angeles again, and Eric Dickerson's record holder. So I'm going to do better than I did for Eric. I'm going to get you my deal, and we'll swap services, my friend.
Sounds good to me.
That everybody needs. So check out UTech. Check out Wilbur U. This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.